you change your mind. So my first task is to go through a quick summary of the 5 articles from this month. So I'll try and do that in just a few minutes. The first article was called Rocks Cubed, Boosting Returns on Leadership, Customer and Employee Experience. And that was by Matt Eagle and Sanjay Saha. This article proposes that one major business challenge is how to integrate these 3 elements, being leadership experience, customer experience, and employee experience. That's the return on experience cubed. And it's quite a long article presenting a conceptual idea about how that can work. And it looks at both the short-term operational and long-term strategic aspects of management. The second article is called Jobs of Tomorrow, and it's a paper from the World Economic Forum. It's another long one, so well done for everyone who kept going through all of the reading this month. And this paper asks what new skills, jobs, and professions are emerging based on a lot of data that it collected from job postings, courses, and they found very briefly that there's going to be a demand for both digital and human factors in the jobs of tomorrow. The third article was from Nikolai Warren, and it's called How Should We Design Checks and Balances Inside an Organization? Quite a short one. And in this article, differentiates between vertical governance and horizontal governance. That means vertical being controls or approvals by managers in the hierarchy, and horizontal governance referring to others who might approve other departments. And this article notes that as organizations are designed flatter with fewer vertical layers, horizontal governance might increase as more employees participate in the control process. So the main takeaway that I got was that, balance is needed in designing governance. Okay, the fourth article was from Naomi Stanford, and it's called Conversations on Leaders with Nick and Nick. And Naomi writes about some conversations that she'd had with Nick Richmond, who's our EODF chair, and Nick Obolensky, who's the founder of Complex Adaptive Leadership. And this one explores the role of leader in an org design project. It considers how the leaders might influence the outcome of a project, and also looks at leadership in complex environments, looking at the idea that it's not, leadership might not be in one role, but it might be dynamic. Okay, and finally, the fifth article is New Templates for Today's Organizations by the late Peter Drucker. So this one was kind of really cool to read because it was published in 1974. And this one describes the legacy and emerging organization models at that time. And the article uses General Motors or GM as a kind of recognizable standard. And it talks about how the reasons why this model might no longer fit for all companies, such as things like the world is getting more global, there are more diverse product lines, more knowledge workers, and outlines some new design principles. Okay, so that was the 5 articles this week. And I start off, I think everyone's been on this call before, but usually we go through 3 rounds. I have 3 main questions. And the first question is, what themes did you pick up from reading the articles this month? I'd like to start with Jardena. You're on the top of my screen.
Oh, I'm on top of the screen. That's good to know. Yeah, so the theme that I kind of picked up, and we may have even had this theme other times, but was basically, it's complex adaptive systems, like designing for complex adaptive systems and then leading for complex adaptive systems. I thought that was the theme throughout. The only one that was a little bit maybe not was the checks and balances, but I think we can probably have an interesting discussion about checks and balances for complex adaptive systems where you're doing sensing and responding instead of building building sign-offs.
Nice. Thanks, Jardina. Bill, what themes do you pick up?
So first, Jody, thank you for that review. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that one. that one. And I'm going to actually, I'm going to join in with Jardina in terms of, I'm going to use actually her language. It's better than mine. But I saw the theme is the trajectory towards complex adaptive systems. And that way, both the GM article and Nikolai's article actually fit in terms of kind of the evolution and movement towards adaptive complex organizations.
Thanks, Bill. Diane, what would you like to share?
I was hoping something would pop into my head as I was listening. I'll be honest, the themes didn't naturally emerge for me. I'm still trying to figure out what I think the theme might be. The thing I kind of picked up on is just the need to balance, with which kind of goes along with what you're saying. But I'll be honest, there were no strong themes that popped out at me other than just kind of that, yeah, it's always going to be a balancing as you're trying to evolve. Things won't stay the same. So I'm sorry, I don't have anything more concrete to offer. But honestly, I didn't see a strong connection between the articles.
Still a good, honest answer. Thanks. Andrew. What did you notice?
I was struggling with a theme as well. I don't know, I always get surprised by the what's the theme question, even though it comes every month. I'm like, oh yeah, we're meant to do themes. And I didn't think about it again. You know, thinking about, you know, what just came before, continuing that, when I reflect on them, maybe the theme is that in these big, large, complex systems, some of the solutions don't have to be on the macro scale, but can be micro. So you can use simple building blocks to address some of those things. So when we talk about the balance between checks and balances, right, of the horizontal and the vertical, you don't necessarily have to solve for the whole big organization. Maybe you need a couple of micro tools and plug them in as appropriate. And I think there are some of those themes as well in the 1974 article from Drucker, where he kind of has those two simple models to start with and says it's somewhere in between, but you can take these models and see where they apply and where they don't. So maybe that's where the theme is, the taking simple models and applying them in parts to big complex systems.
Can I just pop in and say how much I love that, Andrew? And at some point I would love for us to all have a conversation about the word at scale. Because everything has to be at scale nowadays, and it waters down everything else. So I love that interpretation. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, okay. At scale, we might have time today to start talking about it. I still have Janet. Janet, would you like to say something about themes?
Sure. So I like what everybody said. For me, it was emergent ways of working. Give me 1 second. I'm going to just close out a background noise. I'm going with emergent ways of working.
Thanks, Janet. Okay, let's go straight to the next question, which is often the fun one, which is your favorite article and what are the reasons for that? Let's start this time with Diane, if you're ready.
Sure. I actually like them all. Probably the one that stood out for me was the checks and balances, probably because it really hit home with me. That idea that governance, and I kind of jotted this down, it's about prioritization, execution. But, you know, when I'm talking about the horizontals, more people get involved, it gets more complex, and it slows things down. So balancing that need, I even wrote efficacy, so it needs to be efficient, but also effective. So I kind of like that because it's a real world problem that I see all the time. You're trying to get more people involved, but the more people, more groups that are involved, it slows things down. And I loved his point about, you know, you can make a decision and then it gets down to lower levels of governance and somehow it gets re-questioned and you kind of go back to square one. So I think I liked his article because it seemed very relevant to what I see today. And again, I like that theme of trying to figure out what's the right balance between the two. It needs to be a little bit of both. And whatever you do, you need to keep in mind that it needs to be efficient as well. So that's the one that stood out for me this time.
Yeah, I like that. Thanks, Diane. Andrew, what about
you? I am with Diane. I also like checks and balances. Really short and didn't say here's the answer, which is always great. And there's a kind of a micro theme there. He talked about, you know, choices between the two and the balance, right? And then so that was my favorite one. The other article I liked, I think, even more, but not for the article itself, but for the links that she included, was Naomi's. And one of the things she included was the choice architecture, which I skimmed through and need to go back and read in detail, where it talks about choices and, you know, how you make those balances. So that was my favorite because I really thought it talked to a dilemma, or not a dilemma because they're both good outcomes, but a real choice you have to make and make in the right context. And there's not a right answer, just a balance. Perhaps balance is the right answer.
Cool. Okay, I'm going to have to go back and read some of Naomi's links now. Janet, what was your favorite?
Sorry about that just now. So I think my favorite, I unfortunately didn't get through the Drucker article, but of the four that I read, it's often the case, but Naomi's article I thought was particularly rich this time. I found, I love the fact that she just poses so many interesting and provocative questions. Just what impact does leader style or status have on org design? That it's such a simple question, but hugely rich in terms of thinking through what that might yield within the design process. I liked what she was saying about the four dimensions of role, and especially the piece about the sentient system, the social human process within an organization, symbols, meanings, unconscious group forces and or emotional significance experienced. And she goes on in that. Again, it's so easy to be very concrete, and I recognize the need for the simplicity, but at the same time, it's these sometimes the more ethereal things that have most profound impact and that we fail to take note of.
Very interesting. Thanks, Janet. Just Jardina, I haven't asked you yet, have I, about favorites? Oh. Okay, and then Bill.
I loved the checks and balances just because of the provocative question it asked. I think there wasn't a lot in the article, but there's a lot of room for creative discussion on how to create checks and balances. You don't have to model it after government by having two sets of committees. It could be, you can find creative ways to build checks and balances, and I think that's fascinating. But the other one that I really liked was the Drucker article, which so many of the things, of course, we're still not doing. But I loved this one sentence in there where he says, good organization structures will not just evolve. The only things that evolve by themselves in organization are disorder, friction, and malperformance. And I'm super curious if people think that's true, or if there's some problem with the way we're designing organizations that lead them to evolve that way. Like, could we set them in, we set them on a different course so that they evolve in a more fruitful way? So that was fascinating that he had that.
I really liked that sentence as well. It got me thinking about, because I agree with it, but then I started thinking about learning organizations and different ways that people talk about an organization that can kind of self-correct and adjust as it goes. Interesting. Let's move to Bill.
So I want to respond to Jardina's question because it also fits in with kind of the overview of a number of the articles, and that is the rudimentary aspect of a polarity, and that everything has a polarity. And so again, to me, when we look at that quote about things going into disruption or disarray, part of that is depending on how you're viewing it, because you also have in the universe, you have decay, which then creates the opportunity for new things, but you also have the creation, which then provides the thing that is going to decay. Again, it's part of the same thing. So I don't think that it's, I think it's provocative to say that if you don't have structure, you have decay. But on the other hand, if we go back to one of the articles that we did, I think it was a McKinsey article that talks about the need for both stable and dynamic processes in the organization. And to me, ultimately, it's kind of like you need to have right brain and you need to have left brain. It's not one or the other. And so that would be the way I would respond to that question is it's one part of a polarity. But the article that I liked the best was the one on the future jobs. And I think that's a projection based on, I'm working in an 80,000 person organization, you know, who's looking at digital transformation. I'm doing agile, and it's got these structures, and it's got like the Nicolay's article, it's got the horizontal informal, which is trying to develop. And also they just organically emerged in order to get things done. And then it's got the formal structure. And the real question is not those two systems, but how they fit together. And again, to me, part of that is when we're looking at the future of our work with AI and digital, and we know there's a lot of hype and that it's not happening as rapidly as the hype spin masters are suggesting, but we know that it is going to effectively, it's going to affect our work. And as designers, again, are we looking at how, you know, GM did this or how we traditionally did roles? Or are we looking at those things? And the article is great in terms of identifying the types of roles and the types of work that's coming and going. So to me, that was just a really kind of futuristic. It's kind of gives me a little bit of a way to talk to my people who are afraid. They're just afraid, you know, that they're going to lose their jobs. So that was my favorite.
Thanks, Bill. Very nice. Let me pause and check if there's anyone else who wants to chime in with favorites or things that appealed to them from the articles.
Can I maybe just jump in and say one thing in response to what Bill was saying? What I found actually disappointing about that article was that when I looked at the people space, I felt that it was decidedly non-disruptive. There was so much in there that was, but that's what we've been doing for decades. Surely our world of people and work is going to become more interesting than what you're saying. I almost felt like that there'd been lack of thought around it, which for me was a pity. But also, the opportunity for us, maybe we're not actually doing the creative work in order to say what it's going to be like and what jobs are going to emerge.
Mm-hmm. And to follow up on that, Janet, again, in the banking industry, which is the industry that I happen to be in, I've been in the last couple of years, we're losing about 25% of the jobs with automation and AI. However, we're gaining about 30%, 35% of new kinds of jobs as a result of that. And so, you know, so to me, again, I'm searching for that in that article. So to me, I was able to kind of see some stuff that kind of reinforce, again, and help me develop the conversation with our organization that it's not all, you know, going to go away. And that there are new opportunities. And so that was the lens in which I was reading that article. But I concur with you, Janet.
Yeah. And then I think also missing for me, certainly I don't know in the South African context, people are talking a lot about those non-technical skills. Things like critical thinking, creative thinking,
collaboration, et cetera, et cetera. And again, I felt that that element was missing, and that is the people part. So, yeah, sorry.
No, it's good, Janet. Thanks for that. And I appreciate also that you brought in a more, some critical viewpoint, because that always makes these calls great when we also ask, which is anyway the next question, was there an article which was your least favorite, or let's hear about what irritated you or you questioned. Let's go with Andrew on that.
Okay, I've been waiting for this one. The experience cube thing, it was so meh to me, I couldn't believe it. I don't know where to start. It just made me angry reading it, and I felt I wasted my time. And then I wondered if I was arrogant, which is possible as well. It just felt like someone had an idea and just splattered it on the page. This is a great idea that will excite our clients with leadership experience. And I'm like, well, what is that? And there didn't even seem to be any definition to me, but maybe that's because I was reading it with blinkers on at that stage, just so fed up with it. So customer experience, employee experience is like, oh, well, let's think of another one. It felt like it was a nice idea, but it just underdeveloped, and a consultant wanting to sell a concept. Where do I end? I'll stop there. Would love to hear what other people thought and what
I'm going to pile on to that, Andrew. So funny. I had a very similar reaction to that article. It's like, this article is sponsored by the letter X. We want to use X as much as possible. I did like that leadership experience. I liked coining the phrase leadership experience. That was kind of interesting, but I felt like it was such a consulting article. And in my notes here, I wrote something about this article made me cringe, because it was let's be adaptive and do it through chess mastering. And it was like, leaders get to decide who, they get to hear all the data and then decide what to do with it, instead of what we're trying to do, which is like encourage people to take their own action. And they just couldn't let go of having a separation between leaders and employees. Like, they just couldn't let that go. And then it was like, you're going to go hand pick some of the employees that we think are good and then let them, you know, anoint them as leaders. Like, I was just cringing through that whole thing. So that's not going to end well. Like, that's like the old LDP, like the leadership development process or leadership development programs, where you anoint some people. And I know, you know, and then those people are going to get promoted faster. It's just not, yeah. It just doesn't end well.
Except for the partner who sells it. It might end for him or her well.
Right. Yeah, right. That's why it's a consulting thing, right? Like, so this is a little consulting sales model that you can, you can do. And the customer seems so unimportant. Like, they're at the end of this thing. Sorry. Yes, I had a negative reaction to that one. I can't hold it back.
Great. Okay, let's hear what Diane has got to say.
Okay, so I won't pile on, but I'll just share this. When I saw the rocks cubed, and right away I thought this is probably not going to go well. So just a little too cute for me. But I'll talk about a different article. The Jobs of Tomorrow. I thought it was kind of dry. I mean, a lot of it seemed like, okay, yeah, that makes sense, but nothing really caught my attention except for one thing that I starred. It was in the key finding sheet. And it just hit home again about how important the care economy will be in the future. And I thought about, you know, that's demographics, they are what they are. That's definitely happening as people get older. And that human and technology connection, how they will work together to really, you know, help support this economy that's coming, which a lot of people are going to need care. So I didn't like it because it seemed kind of dry, and it just was like there was no real ahas, but I did throw in the one thing that really struck me again is, yeah, that care economy is coming, and that's, I think, where maybe a lot of the innovation will need to come in the future years. So that's it.
Thanks, Diane. Bill, what would you like to add?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do, because I do this, is observe on our observation process. And then to me, kind of from a neuroscience perspective, you know, if I get really attracted to something or I really don't like something, in either of those instances, my frontal cortex shuts down and I don't pay attention. And I just love it because, again, some of us saw things like, again, Diane, I looked at that article simply because I'm trying to find answers for my organization. So I wasn't really processing it from the perspective of like, did I like it or not? I was like, where do I go and find stuff? But I agree with you, Diana. It's like, it was not really easy to consume, but there's some nuggets in there. I also think that, you know, I look at the leadership thing and, you know, and I have to pile on that pile as well too. Because again, it's like, okay, this should be added to the GM article because that's the way we used to think about leadership, you know? And so, and at the same time, I'm in an organization, you know, big hierarchical organization that still, I think the big GM had the big leadership thing where it's like, let's go find the ideal leaders. And I mean, I don't know if there's any relationship with that and what happened to GM recently, but that cult of leadership, again, to me, if we're thinking about it from a design perspective, you know, we really pay attention to leadership as the fifth thing, you know, after what's our vision and what's our work processes and skills and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if we're thinking about it kind of from that traditional thing. So for me, anytime I see an article like that, you know, my frontal lobe shuts down. It's like, okay, here we go again. And in this era of dynamic processes, and again, looking at Naomi's article and about the few simple rules and all that kind of stuff, it's kind of like situationally, what kind of leadership do you need, how and where, as opposed to allocating it? So that was, yeah, that was my worst article. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. And also thanks, Andrew, for checking in with me about my views. A lot of what you've said were also thoughts that came to my mind, but maybe I could add a perspective again on the future of jobs article, because I found it quite dry and hard to get through, and I'm thinking about that the way it was prepared and intended was very much on combing through the data and coming up with conclusions, and I was just wondering that if it's interpreting the data, which is by definition from the past, the missed opportunity, I think, was some perhaps creative interpretation about what could that mean that is different. So it didn't really go very far into the future. It just went into kind of, you know, all this data and it's got us to here. And that would have been, for me, that would have been really interesting if, you know, they might have said, well, I don't know, we've got the digital and the human side. Perhaps what we're missing is the skills required to work with AI, or, you know, obviously I'm just making it up, but that would have made it really much more interesting.
Yeah. And Jody, if I may, I think part of that also is look at the nature of who we are. Again, maybe a researcher, an academician might look at that from a resource perspective. And to me, Jody, I'm looking at it the same way you are. It's like, so what meaning could I make of this in terms of, you know, the work that I'm doing? So I'm with you on there. There really wasn't, it was not conclusive. It was, and there were not, you know, projections. And I like that kind of stuff. So I had to kind of make up my own.
Yeah, this is the article I only got 1/4 of the way through because it was so long. During the discussion, what I've been thinking, though, is it's really intriguing to think about that article, which is the future of, you know, work sort of article, which, you know, self-proclaiming we're looking into the future. And in a sense, what we're saying is, well, you're not looking into the future. You're just projecting trends from the past.
Yes.
So you're not being predictive, but not perhaps insightful. Then to juxtapose that with the Drucker article, and say, okay, so Drucker was pretty opinionated, right? I don't think there's any surprises there. You know, self-proclaimed, you know, guru in the end. So if I go back to 74 and I'm doing my math as I talk, so that's what's 45 years ago, thereabouts, right? It was intriguing to me. What did he miss? You know, what was like, wow, that's still bang on. And I think the thing that was still bang on was like, there is no one answer. And that was really done.
Yeah.
But if I want to go back and kind of think to myself, if there's one model or one insightful person, you know, the Galbraith star just does not seem to go out of style. And I think that's because it's holistic and doesn't really have solutions as such. It says, here are design choices. You always have to go back to your strategy, and you can make these design choices. And I think you can go back to Galbraith star kind of at almost any point and bring new things into it, because there's no boundary on the model. You can take in, oh, well, I need to consider this a bit and think of that part of the star in this new context. Whereas Drucker seemed to be very of its time and kind of stuck in a leadership GM mode of thinking and didn't foresee a more fluid future, even though there were clues in the article. It didn't seem to think that the future would embrace that. So I'm wondering, when we look back on this future of jobs in 10 years' time, what will we say that was stuck in of its time and wasn't able to be kind of even within itself, what forward-looking enough or flexible enough almost?
I think that's a great question, Andrew. I think that's a great question. And my initial reaction to that would be, just as always, you know, it's like the successful companies in the past who said, we're going to be successful because we're going to continue doing what we've done, and they're out of business now. To me, the challenge with that kind of report is it does not attend to the complexity. It does not attend to the innovation that occurs that is not predicated on the past. And again, I'm looking at, there's so many subtle innovations occurring that are shifting the nature of the way we do work, that to me, I think it's, that is what's going to make that article, you know, outdated, you know, like the 2000 prediction about what work would be about. So that's just my initial thought. I'm curious what other people think too, in terms of that great question, Andrew, of what would make this outdated, based on, you know, looking at it from the future backwards.
I have some opinions, because it's a shock to everybody. So it was interesting in the Drucker article, because the one, you know, he talks about like, it's got to be an organism and it's got to be adaptable and there's no one answer, but it has to have a hierarchy, he says.
Yeah.
That's the one, right. You know, he's like, it has to have a hierarchy. That's the one thing. I mean, maybe not, right? Biological organisms don't have a hierarchy. So in the World Economic Forum thing about the jobs that I didn't finish also because it was painful, the thing that's interesting there is, you know, the fourth industrial revolution, right? Like that everyone has to put that in their article nowadays, or in their presentation. If it is the fourth industrial revolution, then it's disruptive, just like any of the industrial revolutions. And so it is hard to, you can't track it on a linear trajectory, right? So they didn't look to see like what's gonna be totally disrupted. They just looked to see what trends are happening, right? Mm. So it'd be interesting to dig in and go, oh, this is gonna be completely different, right? Not just go away or grow, right? So that's what I think we're gonna look back on and go, oh, we were way off because we were following a linear path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
I just think it's good to, I wanna leave this question out there at the moment, because I agree with Bill, it's such a good one. And pause and ask if anyone else would like to chime in. Well, then I will a little more.
I was going to say.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Sorry. Yeah, the invention of the pause part and the industrial revolutions, I need to do more reading clearly and work out the first, second, third, right? But yeah, some of them I know about. I guess the projection part is really interesting. And Jardine, I really liked your point there. You know, a revolution by nature of its title is disruptive, right? And if I think about I'm trying to think of, oh my goodness, what is it called? Not algebra, but when you do differentiation and integration, that sort of stuff, that sort of math.
Calculus.
I'm that math now.
Calculus. Yeah. Calculus.
Oh, sorry?
Calculus.
Calculus. Thank you very much. The thing about calculus, right, you know, you've got a dy dx that goes to infinity, right? So that made me think, what were the jobs? Say you went to the Industrial Revolution where, you know, you're in Telford in the UK and you made your first iron bridge. What were the jobs that people couldn't even imagine then? And I think if I go back to, you know, when I was growing up, you know, kind of getting conscious in the 70s, of jobs I couldn't imagine, you know, some of the jobs that just seem so common now, like someone has a nail salon. I mean, yeah, I'm sure that did exist in the 70s, right, in LA and the like, but that wasn't a job I imagined being a job, if you know what I mean, outside of Greece and, you know, beauty school dropout. So I'm trying to think, what are the jobs that we're not even imagining? And I guess that's the question that's being posed, and we don't know, right? But it'll be fun just to imagine them and think, yeah, that sounds crazy that we could actually spend money and pay someone to do that job. That's weird. Certainly there are some jobs that I see that are being defined. The project, the job title that I keep coming across, or, you know, data scientists and product managers, right? And the idea that many people think data scientists are going to be product managers, but data scientists aren't interested usually in product management. They're really different things. So I wonder how that kind of whole data interpreter and product management, where product isn't something tangible, but is a part of a website, where's that going to go? Yes. That's kind of, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, so and when I think about, you know, that same question of what are the new kinds of jobs that we couldn't have imagined, this kind of work that we're doing, I couldn't have imagined.
That's true.
It's like, oh that.
But
also really the integration of both the structured and the dynamic activity and asking. Mm. You know, our data managers, again, I've got a data management team and we're getting them to shift from product or project management to product management. And so again, and that's, you know, part of the agile kind of thing is focus on products as opposed to projects and focus on the customers. To me, that whole shift from project management, which was so big, you know, early in my career, to really product management is a big shift, and the integration of both the logical people and the people and looking for that integration. And again, to me, one of the things that when I'm working with a team, a frontline team, is it is the integration of the right and the left brain, the logical and the people, the human, the customers and the outcome. So to me, that kind of integration is new. The other thing that I think about, and this is refers to, you know, Janet mentioned this, and I think someone else did too, but I don't know that I could have imagined, you know, home nurses, you know, people coming to your home to help you. You know, you went to the hospital, you went to the clinic, you know, unless you did naturopathic stuff, but that whole field is something that I could have never imagined, you know, prior to now. Anyway, those are a couple ideas.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. Hillary, thanks. I saw you put something in the chat. Do you want to say a few words about that?
Yeah, it was a couple of points that were coming to mind inspired by the conversation. I didn't want to interrupt the flow. So one brainwave was, do they actually have to be new jobs or can it be a combination of skills? For instance, data-informed product management. So in a previous incarnation, I did a lot of work for a consultancy on their recruitment and talent management strategies. And we got a mandate for data scientists. So me being me, I went out into that community and went to tech startups, the Impact Hub, meetups, all of this kind of thing, and went out to actually talk to data scientists so I could really understand the profile. And then also build the relationships so that they might want the job we had. And what I found was that it was not, yes, okay, there was this new kind of body of knowledge or skill set emerging, data science. But then what I found was that it was almost a back office function, but there was a new combination of skills that other more front of house roles were required to have. For instance, data-informed product management or data-informed category management on the procurement side. So the other one is that when you mention integration, I think one of the things that's new is this bringing together the upstream and the downstream. And it used to be very much, you know, out with the customer, or it was, you know, for instance, in the pharma industry with the data, with the research scientists playing with molecules and their test tubes and their microscopes and their white coats and all the rest of it. And I'm convinced that research development, production, testing and supply processes have got to become so integrated now that upstream and downstream, for an organization to succeed, you can't almost, they've got a mesh. And then Bill, inspired by your example, I think there's massive cultural differences. So for instance, I grew up with home helps, and this was something, so we had a housekeeper come in because my father worked long hours and there was, three boisterous kids. So that was a lot for my mother, especially when she wanted to go back to work. So, and that also I grew up in an aging community. So there were home helps. So that's something that for me is normal, but it may not be normal in another society, another economy, if you go east or west, where the assumption is it all falls back on the family. Whereas we were gone. So you got home helps. You see what I mean? So I think what you're also going to get is, to sum it up, very interesting new combinations, integration, and I think you're probably going to get a blurring of cultural differences where East comes West and West goes East. And I don't even start me on North and South. I've got no clue.
Thank you, Hilary.
All right.
I realized that, Janet, I didn't get to you with the question about which article didn't you like, but you kind of kicked us off with that. So I just,
yes, I did.
You had something else.
No, I absolutely did. But a thought that came out of that whole conversation, which for me is quite important. There was quite a bit of, again, bashing of the idea of the sort of leadership hierarchical perspective of leaders as these, you know, gurus and special people. And I just wondered if we read those articles with a slightly different perspective, seeing leadership not as a select group of people, but as a tray within all people. I'm working on a culture project at the moment with a client, and she just said something straight out the other day. She said, you know, leaders are employees too, which kind of echoed what we were saying. And maybe if we read it through that lens of saying it's not just about these select group of people, but if we looked at leadership as it is, as it expresses itself in every employee, then maybe there's some interesting perspectives there.
Yes, I like that comment, that insight very much, Jenna. Yeah, it links. I think it links back to also Naomi's article around the leadership topic.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to check in with Brenda, Rich, and Eamon. I can't see you, but I hope everything's still okay. Would anyone like to ask a question or make a comment? Rich?
Yeah, this is Rich. I actually did read the articles. I've enjoyed listening. I have to say, compared to previous months, I agree some of them were dense, but I found the ahas that I got from the articles were fewer than I've had before. So I don't know if that's a theme or not, but interesting, but previous months there would be two or three, wow, I can use that. And this month I didn't have that.
I'd agree with you there, Richard.
Not a criticism, just observation.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Thanks. Brenda, Eamon, little bit of space for you if you'd like. And if not, it's also fine. Okay. We still have 10 minutes and I'm really enjoying the discussion a lot. I wanted to add something as well to the discussion around, predicting the jobs of the future. This morning my time, I joined an ODC webinar. I don't know if it's the first time I've ever joined one. And it was a presentation from, and I'm going to get his name wrong, Panish Panaman. Does anyone know? He's at INSEAD and he wrote the book called The Microstructure of Organizations.
What's ODC?
The Organization Design Community, which is another one of our partner communities. And they are, I think
they're a little more academic based.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this the right way to say it? They're very academic oriented. And the webinar this morning was about the role of algorithms in organization design. And I'm loving the conversation right now because now it all feels quite connected. So he was defining what is an algorithm, which in this he included artificial intelligence and machine learning. And he was very clear about being the ability to look at data to find patterns in the data and from those patterns in data predict future and make decisions based on that. Only data, or is data enough to help us make decisions on the future? And what's the other part, which kind of feels like what we've been talking about. So
Jody, what was the word you used? Micro something? What was the title of it? Microorganizing? Are we frozen?
She appears frozen, so okay. The rest of you all are moving.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone know what she said that was micro something?
I think it's microstructure.
Yeah, it's the microstructure of organizations.
Yeah.
I love that because that also speaks to what we were saying before about at scale.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it this way, so I just had an aha that if we can implement microstructures and almost like little objects, I guess, or almost like web objects, right? I'm a techie. As your org structure and let it be more fluid, like the starlings, that could be interesting.
Yeah. So I think about holacracy and Brian Robertson's approach to teams, which is filled with microstructure. It's like when you have a tension, you talk to the other groups that those tensions arise with, and then you self-adapt. It goes back to Marilyn Emery's, design principle number two, which is self-organizing teams. And so to me, it's like, and the question is this is the challenge. If you've got a small organization, not a scale organization, a small organization doing agile, you can do that easily. But then you get to ING. And that's, that's like you've got now a large organization and how do you manage that? And larger organizations tend to default to that, what Nikolai was talking about. Now we've got to have a combination of both vertical and horizontal. And I think about like the method called scaled agile, where hierarchical organizations are doing agile and it builds that vertical and the horizontal in to that, you know, to that approach. These are just some musings.
So, Yardena, would you go into, would you say a bit about at scale? What does that mean, or what are the various meanings?
I'll tell you my interpretation, but I'd love to hear what people think it really means. I feel like nowadays I can't even open my mouth without somebody saying, well, how do you do that at scale? Like, I can say we should be nice to each other, and I did. And somebody said, well, how do you do that at scale? It's like, I don't know, do I have to solve it at scale? And so to me, whenever I hear that, it means, how do we mass produce it, right? But I may be just having a bias. But when I think about some of this stuff, you know, we talk even about org design and sense and respond, how do we do that at scale? I love the concept of, and my answer is always, we don't do it at scale, right? We do it at scale by doing microstructures.
So, Yardena.
Well, and lots of them.
Sure. Yeah.
What comes to mind is after 9/11, the year after 9/11, in New York City, we brought together 5,000 residents, and we scaled dialogue. And the way we did that is we had tables of 8 people, facilitator, every person had a preference indicator, and then we posed the questions about the design of the new site. And so we use technology to scale dialogue. So when I think of scaling, that's what I, how can you have relationships at a larger level? So again, that, Yardena, just occurred to me when you said scaling, how do we do that? And to me, part of it is that idea that Nikolai talked about, which is if we've got, you know, the old research on the optimum size of an organization is 100 or 200. And how do you scale that, like Gore-Tex and places like that? It's like, well, from the STAR model perspective, you create linking mechanisms. And to me, we used in that at the Jacob Javits Center, the linking mechanism was technology connecting the 500 tables. And we had a theme team. Now, the theme team was the non-technical piece. So rather than have an algorithm, we had a group of people who were scanning the input and then putting it up on the screen, and then people voted a second time. So to me, there are really kind of interesting human technical interfaces that allow us to scale. That was just the example that came to mind, Yardena.
Love it. I love it. Thank you.
And today you could have a data scientist using NLP to do that.
Who knows?
Now? Welcome back, right. Jody. We kept it going for you.
Back to combination skills.
I just completely fell out of the call and I thought, oh, everyone will be fine. And then I came back and you are all fine. And then I realized we're getting to the end of the time. I don't have a brilliant idea for an elegant ending. So I'm just going to let us find our way to an elegant ending. At scale and without hierarchy.
So I'm going to do a sentence checkout. I love this framework and this process and listening to different perspectives. And every time I feel so fortunate that everybody who's put this together and people who show up do it, because it just expands my consciousness. And I just love that. Mm-hmm. That was longer than a sentence. Sorry.
I'll give one sentence. Ditto.
That's a word.
You stole mine.
It'll also be a sentence.
Sentence needs a subject and a verb. Come on.
No, it's a sentence that could be scaled. You can scale that. Ditto. Put a subject and a verb.
May I offer gratitude to everyone? Is that at scale?
Absolutely. Thank you, Hilary. Same.
Yeah, I just love the ideas and also share gratitude, especially for those who kind of organize it every time and you know, basically are volunteering for my benefit. So that is much appreciated. And I love the ideas that come out of it. So I've already clicked on 2 links and that's, you know, 2 bookmarks I'll go back to and get even more. So the kind of, the goodness goes on.
So this is Rich. My my one sentence, it will be a compound sentence, is gratitude for everyone that puts the effort into making these happen, and a retraction of what I said earlier, that as I listened to the conversation, I did not read the articles very carefully, and especially the pervasiveness of hierarchy is an aha that I've carried away from today. So thank you.
Thank you, everybody. It's always wonderful.
Great to have you back, Janet. It's been a few months that...
yes.
What is it? Life electricity, meetings, all kinds of issues have kept you from being able to join us. So.
It's been a crazy couple of weeks. It's at the end of my day here in South Africa, and sometimes things just snowball, and with the best intention of the world, I don't get to be online when I need to be. So, but thank you.
And yeah, Jody, I'm really glad we had everyone here. Jody. Everyone who is here.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, Jody.
Yeah, thanks, Jody.
Well, I was going to say thanks for making it such a joy to facilitate this time. And everyone enjoy the rest of their day and evening.
Yes, thank you all for being here. And I'll shoot a note out if, because I download the chat and a recording of the video, and you all know when that's available if you have any questions.
Awesome.
Thank you, Tanya.
Take
thank
care,
you.
Everyone.
Tanya.
Bye, bye then. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.